Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. My name is Gil McGregor, and I am joined by Kyle Irving. Kyle, it's been a minute since the people have heard your voice, so I feel like we owe them an apology because it's been a minute since they've heard you. It's also been a minute since you've heard us on here, but we're back, and there's plenty to talk about because Olympic basketball is right around the corner.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been 3 weeks. I mean, we had the holiday week where I was away, and then our schedules didn't line up last week, so we weren't able to record and get a pod to you guys. But, you know, I mean, 3 weeks ago was the NBA draft, and 4 weeks ago we saw the Celtics crowned as NBA champions. And I can't believe that it's only been 4 weeks and 3 weeks since those events. It's absolutely insane. But, hey, as they say, basketball never stops, and we got the Olympics coming right around the corner. There's been Summer League holding us over until then. WNBA is still going on, so plenty of hoops to talk about, and it's good to be back on the pod.
Honestly, yeah, 6 weeks of stuff has probably happened in the past 3-4 weeks, so it does make sense why I feel like it's been much longer than that. I already teased it, so we might as well get right into it. As we record today, it is Wednesday, July 17th, and USA Basketball is halfway through its exhibition schedule. I think a few hours ago, I think you'd probably agree with me, they had their best, most complete showing, a pretty dominant win over Serbia, who was without Bogdan Bogdanovic and Nikola Jovic. Jovic, J-O-V-I-C, not the MVP, but Nikola Jovic of the Miami Heat, unknown whether or not he's going to be able to play in the Olympics. So they were down two NBA guys, but Nikola Jokic, the three-time NBA MVP, was in the lineup. Now it's important to remember these two teams are in the same group at the Olympics, so they probably aren't going to show their hand. That being said, I was pretty impressed by Team USA. Their roster's been finalized. Derek White has replaced Kawhi Leonard. Kevin Durant is still hurt. A lot of storylines going on, but I guess impressions, not really first impressions, now we watched him play three times, but impressions of Team USA, their roster, how it stands as they're midway through these Olympic preparations as they go for their fifth consecutive gold medal.
I think the biggest thing that stands out to me, aside from just how fun it is to watch this team and like watch those guys fly up and down the court, and like there was a moment in that first game against Canada where I think it was Halbert and that was on a fast break and he could have thrown a lob to literally any of like AD, Bam, JT, or Anthony Edwards, and it was like whoever wants to come down with it, and it's just like, man, that just feels unfair. But like really, like what separates this Team USA team from the other teams that they've played so far, it really is their depth. Like they're bringing Anthony Davis, like in that first game against Canada, and I know we're going to work backwards so that way we can start talking about Canada too, but in that first game against Canada, like the lineup that came off the bench was Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony Edwards, Jason Tatum, Bam Adebayo, and Anthony Davis. Like that's a super team. Like that is that team, that second unit was literally better than the first unit in that game. Yeah. And you know, that's with a starting lineup of on that night, it was Stephen Curry, Devin Booker, Drew Holiday, LeBron James, and Joel Embiid. So it's like, that is where this team really sets itself apart, is that when, you know, other countries that have really built up their rosters, Canada being one of them, Australia being one of them, two teams that have already played Team USA that have, you know, NBA guys pretty much top to bottom. Like when they're bringing off the bench, like guys like, you know, Joe Ingles and Duop Reith, like Team USA is bringing off Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo. That is literally two of the best, arguably the two best, you know, rim protectors in the NBA, depending on where you stand with Rudy Gobert and Victor Wembanyama's trajectory. So, you know, it just shows that this Team USA team, it goes beyond the star talent and like the talent of their best players. It really is just the talent they have, one all the way down to number 12.
No, it's crazy when you said that second unit from that first exhibition game. I was thinking to myself, you said a super team. I'm like, yeah, the over-under for that team would probably be like 58 and a half wins in an NBA season, if not higher than that. And it's crazy because like it's just relentless. Like you said, regardless of what combination, what lineup combination Steve Kerr goes with, whoever's coming at the second unit, you don't get any type of breaks. And arguably, you have a tougher time with those guys. And you mentioned Tyrese Halliburton thing too. Like, I did a radio spot with our friends out in Indianapolis, and they're like, what's his role going to be? And I was like, his role is going to be the most fun he's ever had as a pure point guard, because he's going to have so many different guys that he can set the table for, which is something that he does so well, and he's had an opportunity to do it so far. It's interesting how everybody's kind of carving their roles. You know, I mentioned they had the blowout win over Serbia. They were up big on Australia and then let Australia kind of back in there. Turnovers had plagued Team USA for the first two exhibition games. They kind of cleaned it up against Serbia. And I think the biggest takeaway is, like, we always talk about, you know, man, what would it be like if Steph Curry and LeBron were teammates? And we've seen him play in the All-Star game, but we know the All-Star game has had its criticisms in years past. But this is them playing for gold, something very real, to restore kind of the respect, the allure around USA basketball. Because let's not forget, it was less than a year ago where Team USA, albeit a younger roster of more unproven guys, finished fourth at the Basketball World Cup. And now you talked about the depth, and I think the biggest thing that we should focus on and key in on with this Team USA roster is the starting lineup and the rotations. I think Steve Kerr, after this Serbia game, said he's going to keep his big three in the starting lineup. Steph Curry, LeBron, and Joel Embiid, who's been struggling a little bit, are going to be mainstays in the starting lineup, and they're going to figure it out around those guys. So what's been your impressions of the lineups themselves? Do you agree? I know Joel Embiid is trying to find his way in FIBA basketball. I kind of feel like he has to start, because if he doesn't, I think he would have nothing he could bring to the table. Not to say that he's bad, but I think that what he does bring, the positives are predicated on him starting. And if he figures it out, it's going to be predicated on him starting. So
I kind of changed my stance today during that Serbia game on like the Joel Embiid, should he start, should he not? Because, you know, in those first two games, Anthony Davis was not just, you know, better than Joel Embiid. He was the best player on Team USA in those first two games. He completely dominated off the bench. He's killing second units. You know, he's really like asserting his dominance in the paint on both ends of the floor, protecting the rim, and, you know, just playing that assertive basketball that makes us go, wow, he really is probably a top, what, eight, like top seven best player in the world when he is at his best. He's not always at his best. He takes a lot of nights off in the NBA, and, you know, I don't mean like load management nights. I mean nights where he's actively playing and he's just not going as hard as he can. Yeah. Where like in the first couple games that we've seen from Team USA, that is not the version of Anthony Davis that we've got. We've gotten the guy that, you know, we are reminded that at the time when he was drafted, we're like, hey, this is a generational talent. He could be one of the best players in the NBA. One day he's going to win MVPs, multiple defensive player of the year. It's like he hasn't achieved those things. Obviously, he won an NBA championship, but, you know, we're seeing that version of Anthony Davis. And to me, I'm like, you know what? I said this to you before the tournament started. Like, he's been through a variety of roles with Team USA. Like, he was the college guy on the end of the bench who hasn't even played an NBA game yet and just sat there and waved a towel and clapped his hands for an entire Olympics. Like, to me, I was like, all right, like, I feel like he earned this. Like, he earned a starting spot on this team. But as I'm watching this team actually play, they are at their best with him and Bam Adebayo on the court at the same time. Because AD has said it over and over and over again. Like, he doesn't really want to be a center. He is a center, whether he likes it or not. He is a center, but he doesn't want to be a center. And Bam is used to playing the five, even as an undersized forward, as an undersized five, undersized center.
Right.
But he's physical enough and he's athletic enough and he's fast enough that he can kind of like create, you know, different advantages against like tougher matchups that are bigger than him. So the combination of those two with AD size and length in Bam Adebayo's speed and physicality and athleticism, like, they are terrorizing opposing teams' offenses. And there is nowhere to go once you get into the paint, because those guys cover so much ground and they're so good defensively, not just their physical like tools, but also like their defensive IQ. Like, they are really, really talented defensively. So against Jokic, like, where Team USA kind of implemented a similar scheme that we've seen the Lakers in back-to-back playoff series try and use against Jokic, where they would put Rui Hachimura on Jokic and let AD kind of just play that free safety role and play help side defense and swoop in and block shots, things like that. Like, we got to see some of that with Bam matching up with Jokic and then AD being that help side. And then we also saw vice versa with AD taking on the Jokic assignment and Bam being that help side defense, you know, kind of backside rim protection. So, you know, it just shows the different types of looks that they can throw at teams with that second unit. And it, to me, almost makes it seem like that duo has been too good to break them up. You actually should just keep Joel Embiid in the starting lineup, because even though he's eventually going to find his footing and he's eventually going to make the impact that we expected him to make with Team USA. He's too good not to. But like, as of right now, to me, like, it would be a disservice to break up what Bam and AD are doing with how good USA has been through these first three games. I think you keep them two off the bench, keep Joel Embiid in the starting lineup, and just assume that, hey, he's a former MVP. He's one of the best players in the world. He's eventually going to figure it out.
Yeah, he's got to figure it out. And I agree to your point. I think the best space for him to figure it out is keeping that like role that's static for him, because if other things around him are changing, it'd be too difficult for him to already find his footing in an already difficult situation for him. Also, shout out to Bam on the offensive end. Knocked down three threes against Serbia. So I'm sure Heat fans are excited about that. We'll see if it's fool's gold or not, but we'll see. Also, real quick, you mentioned that matchup with Jokic. They will play again to open group play. USA is also in a group with South Sudan and Puerto Rico, led by Jose Alvarado and Tremont Waters. So that'll be an interesting group to see how that pans out. But it's not the group of death. The group of death is the group that Canada is in. And we've talked about the Canadian national team as the golden age of basketball in Canada. Unfortunately, don't get Andrew Wiggins at this Olympics, but you got a backcourt of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Jamal Murray. And this Canada team is in the same group with Australia, Greece, and Spain. There's never a night off in this group. Two teams will make it out, maybe three, depending on how the Olympics work, depending on how the grouping works. Excuse me. That's how the Olympics works. What are your thoughts about what we've seen from Canada so far? We saw that. I feel like you can't take that much from the game against USA. It was the first game for both teams. Really not that much there. The talent is evident. The talent is obvious. But they got their work cut out because of those teams I mentioned. Greece has a guy named Giannis Antetokounmpo on their team. Spain is no slouch. Australia's got a bunch of NBA talent. It's not going to be easy.
Yeah, I think like that game against USA, they both looked so sloppy for the first half of the game. And then like Team USA's talent just inevitably prevailed in that one. But like, I'm curious to see what Canada goes with first starting lineup. Cause like they went with SGA, Jamal Murray, Dylan Brooks, RJ Barrett, and Dwight Powell in that first game. And to me, like you have to start SGA and Jamal, but they were trying to figure out, okay, how are we really going to play off of each other? Nothing really looked natural there. It looked very like your turn, my turn. And eventually, you know, that's just going to take reps. Like eventually they are going to play well off of each other, but they're going to have to figure it out sooner than later with the tournament right around the corner. I know Canada still has two more tune-up games, one against France, and I think the other's against Puerto Rico. Yep. So, you know, they have two more games to try and figure that out. Obviously, those two are going to start. Dylan Brooks, like, I know they really like what he brings defensively. RJ Barrett's another one who, like, he feels like he's a lock to start, but, like, do they really need his offense in the first group? Like, that's where I'm like, you know, would someone like Lugens Dort make a little bit more sense in the starting lineup just to – you just don't need another mouth to feed? So that's kind of interesting to me. Like, is that a lineup change that they would potentially make? I don't think they would really swap out Dylan Brooks or RJ Barrett. Like, those four – like to me, Dwight Powell, I should say, feels like the one that maybe would be slotted in and out of the lineup depending on the matchup. But, you know, I mean, that's a really talented team. Andrew Nembhard is someone who I was blown away with how good he was in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I really feel like, you know, that version of him that we saw in the Conference Finals is really who he is and what his ceiling is and how good he can be. And I hope that he shows that on the Olympic stage. So I'm excited to watch him. But, you know, I mean, they got plenty of depth with guys like Nikhil Alexander-Walker, you know, Kelly Olynyk, Trey Lyles coming off the bench. You know, that, again, we talk about depth, like that's the type of depth that it might not prevail against Team USA, but against other countries, like that's where you're really going to see Canada shine because the guys they're bringing off the bench are better than the guys that any other country, just about any other country is bringing off the bench. But I will say one last thing before I pass it back to you and get your thoughts on what you've seen from Canada so far. I will say that when Zach Edey had backed out and said that he was going to focus on, you know, what's coming up in the NBA,
the Grizzlies,
I kind of shrugged it off. Like, it was right after the draft. I was like, ah, yeah, that's tough. But I kind of saw it coming. Like, after watching him play in Summer League, I'm like, he is the best. He would have been the best big on Canada's roster.
Yeah.
Zach Edey would have been the best big on Canada's roster. He looked really, really good going up against Walker Kessler, who is someone that played with Team USA at the FIBA World Cup a couple of years ago. He's a legitimate starting caliber center in the NBA. Zach Edey dominated him. He looked really good. I was really impressed. His mobility, his physicality, like all those things that we saw at the college level. I know it's summer league, but like he was those skills were already translating. And I'm sitting there going, damn man, Canada like really could use him for the Olympics. Like in that level of competition would be better than anything that he's seen in summer league. I understand it's a quick turnaround. Like he made it all the way to the national championship and then it's immediately preparing for the NBA draft. And now he's trying to get himself ready to be a major, what seems like could be a major contributor for this Memphis Grizzlies roster. I understand it, but I'm like, damn, he would be really good for Canada. And I really think that he would be their best bet as a starting center.
Yeah, you said it before I even got a chance to, because that's exactly the same thing I was going to say. You know, Zach Edey elected to stay with the Grizzlies and play in Summer League. And the crazy part is, I understand it again, but he ended up, I guess, tweaking his ankle and has only played in one or two games with the Grizzlies this summer. So, I mean, you said he had a heavy workload, not to mention he was at the World Cup last year. So you think about him going from the World Cup to a long college season to draft prep to now getting ready and honestly learning the Grizzlies' defensive schemes and their playbook, because if he's going to have a big role, I completely understand it. But when we talk about this Canada roster, there's no issues on the perimeter. They honestly have an abundance of riches on the perimeter because there are other guys on the perimeter that they could have brought that we talked about. Andrew Wiggins or, you know, Shaedon Sharpe is probably going to be on the roster next Olympic cycle. Those guys, Benedict Mathurin, let me not forget. But in the front court right now, the rotation, like you mentioned, is it going to be Dwight Powell or Kelly Olynyk that get the start? Kim Birch, shout out to him, made the roster despite being out of the NBA for a little bit, played in Spain last year. Trey Lyles, another guy. And Dwight Powell, when he was matched up with Joel Embiid, you were kind of reminded that he's a big guy, but also he does kind of pale in comparison. And that matchup with Greece does loom large because we know that you have to build a wall to stop Giannis. And we know that Giannis in a 40-minute FIBA game does have what it takes to maybe, you know, take advantage of a team if his team does have a lack of depth. And this Greece team is a talented Greece roster. Let's not forget they have Nick Kalathis, you know, Thomas Walkup played at Stephen F. Austin, my former teammate, Dinos Mitoglou, on that roster as well. So, like, that's a talented Greek roster that won the Olympic qualifying tournament to make it there. But you talk about Australia and those other teams and their depth. I think the biggest one is Greece because Giannis is the big fella. Spain, you know, Santi Aldama is a solid player for Spain, but they don't necessarily have, you know, that front court presence like, you know, Greece does with Giannis. So I think that's where it's going to stand out the most for this Canada team. But again, it is hard for just one person to beat you in a 40-minute game, especially if you have the depth. So I think that, like you said, is where Canada has its advantage, but it's definitely going to be crazy to watch it unfold. And we'll learn a lot more about them, especially when we talk about their front court depth, because you mentioned they have an exhibition against a team with a pretty good front court rotation, Victor Wembanyama and Rudy Gobert. They're probably the highest profile team in the rest of the field outside of Team USA and Team Canada. So we'll take a quick break, and then we'll look a little bit around the rest of the field and talk about some things that are happening in the offseason and a little bit of Summer League too, because we won't forsake Summer League. It keeps us so entertained in years that are not Olympic years, so we can't forget about it in 2024. All right, welcome back to NBA Sound System. Before we start talking about the field, okay, I said he's got a pressing inquiry for me, so I'm curious. I have no idea where he's coming from with this, let you know, full transparency. So I don't know if it's trivia. I don't know if it's just a brain teaser. I don't know where he's coming with it right now, but I'm prepared for whatever questions come my way.
No, it's not trivia or a brain teaser. I just wanted to put you on the spot right away. Oh, it's the group of death. It is the toughest group in the Olympics, and I want to outright ask you, is Canada going to win the group of death? Like, you look at, you already mentioned the rosters. You already mentioned the talent around them.
Yeah.
Is Canada, yes or no, going to win the group of death?
Yes. I'm on the spot. Yes. No, we're not riding the fence. I'm going yes. And I'm basing it off of what we saw from Canada at the World Cup last year. They got better as things went on. They got better with every prep game. They got better with every group play game, group stage game. I think that they'll be good enough to win this group. It's crazy to think that one of those teams isn't going to make it. So I guess, instead of asking the same thing, because that'd be boring, because as many as three teams could make it out, which of the four don't make it out, assuming three of them make it out?
I don't think Greece makes it out. They're the team that I think is aw man out. I just, like you said, it's tough to win. With one player, it's tough to win, man. Like, that's, you can build a wall against Giannis and find a way to shut him down. Maybe not shut him down, but contain him. I think they're the team that doesn't make it out. I actually think that Spain is going to end up being the second team, like the second team that qualifies out of the group, where Australia might have to qualify as a wild card. And I'll give you my reason for that. Again, it's tough to base it against the United States. Like, it's tough to base an opinion going up against a team as loaded as Team USA. But I had a concern when I'm watching Australia. Like, they for so long have relied on Patty Mills to be the guy, to be the go-to scorer. And he just doesn't really have the juice like that anymore. Like, he's going to bring it. When he's repping the Boomers green and gold, he's going to bring it. We've learned that. But, like, he's running out of steam, and they don't really have another creator like that. I gave Josh Giddey a ton of credit for the way that he played against the United States. I thought he did a really good job staying aggressive and kind of trying to jump into that role. Same goes for Dyson Daniels. I thought Dyson Daniels was aggressive on the offensive end, and I was like, okay, I see what these guys are trying to do. Like, they're trying to step into that role, but, like, neither of them are natural shot creators. Neither of them are natural go-to scorers. So, like, I'm watching that team, and I'm like, all right, yeah, they have a lot of talent top to bottom. And they have the continuity that a team like, you know, Canada is trying to build, but they don't have the level of continuity that a team like Spain does. Like, that roster has been together forever, and they have plenty of guys that have talent, that have enough talent to to, you know, make a threat to win the group of death. So I'm going to agree with you that Canada wins the group of death. I think Spain gets the second spot. I'm going to go Australia with a wild card and Greece. Adios.
They're done. That's interesting to think. And that's why one last note on that Spanish team for Raptors fans, you'll be familiar not only with Juancho, Bo Cruz, Hernan Gomez, but also Lorenzo Brown is a naturalized Spanish citizen. So he will be suiting up for Spain. So if you see him out there, you think you recognize him. It is the same Lorenzo Brown. I think he was also G League MVP with Raptors 905. So he had quite the history with Toronto. Real quick, the rest of the field outside of the group of death, outside of Team USA. I know I mentioned Spain a little bit. I know you're pretty excited to see Victor Wembanyama. Also Bilal Coulibaly and that French national team. Anything else that you're looking forward to with this Olympic field and these teams that have made it to the tournament?
Yeah, Group B is definitely intriguing with France and then Germany. I mean, the team that's coming off of winning the World Cup, like again, we talk about continuity. Like, that is a team that it feels like those are the same names. Like, even if they're not NBA guys, it's the same names that are showing up every tournament. Like, every time these tournaments come around, you're like, oh, who's on Germany now? You're starting to recognize some of these names that are popping up all the time. But obviously led by Dennis Schroeder, who, again, kind of like we said with Patty Mills, like, when Dennis Schroeder is wearing his country's colors, like, the guy literally turns into Michael Jordan. It's a different brand of basketball. So, like, between guys like him and Daniel Theis, like, you know, obviously the Wagner brothers, like, they have a lot of talent as well. So, you know, I'm fully expecting Group B to bring a lot of juice and a lot of energy there. And then, you know, outside of that, like, it's going to be who is going to claim these wild cards. I already said that I think Australia is probably going to be the one out of Group A. It's going to be really tough to claim a wild card out of Group C, just because you're going to assume that teams like USA and Serbia are going to beat up on Puerto Rico and South Sudan pretty good. And when it comes down to point differential and things like that, it's going to be tough for one of them to make it. So, you know, the other team that I had circled as a wild card is Brazil. I just feel like that's another team that, like, you know, there's a lot of guys that are continuously showing up. And Bruno, exactly. Yeah. Another shout out to a former Raptors legend. But, you know, I feel like that's another team that they have the same guys showing up all the time. There's some continuity there. And it, to me, it feels like they could be another team that claims a wild card. I don't know if you have a different team in mind, or again, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. I don't know if you have another team that you were thinking of that might be able to crack through the group stage and finish in that top eight.
No, that sounds about right to me. You know, it's funny, as we were talking about these teams and going through these teams, I'm like, man, they got a former Raptor. And it's funny because it just kind of talks about this. It just tells how the Raptors are really a global team. And the other one I was thinking about, one, Dennis Schroeder, which is funny to think maybe Raptors fans want to forget about that one. But also Yuta and Japan. They'll be a fun story to follow. Kisei Tominaga, who played at Nebraska, will be fun to watch. So, you know, they could be a team that, and they kind of surprised people with the way that they qualified for this. So I think that that's going to be exciting to see. You know, maybe they could not necessarily, I'm not going to pick them to advance out of their group, but I could see them playing spoiler, whether it's, you know, winning a game or hanging around when they weren't necessarily supposed to hang around. You know, we saw Team USA, you know, in 2021 lose to France early on in the tournament. We saw Team USA in 2004 lose to Carlos Arroyo led Puerto Rico team. He's in a managerial position with Puerto Rico, and now Jose Alvarado and Tremont Waters kind of split that role with the team. So, you know, it's interesting, like we talked about, can one player do it? And based on matchups, based on talent, based on depth, I think that's going to be the fun thing. Slovenia didn't make it, so we won't see Luka do what he did, you know, a few years ago in the Olympics. But I'm most excited to see, you know, will we see, you know, a Patty Mills legacy game to allow them to win the wild card or get them out of the group? You know, will we see Wemby, you know, ascend to another level, you know, at this, because he always does, right? But to see guys like that and realize that some of these NBA guys, you know, they're NBA guys for a reason, even if they're not the focal point of their NBA team, when they get to put on their country's colors, you see, you know, a different monster, different beast, you know, in those uniforms. We talked about former Raptors playing in the Olympics. We might as well talk about a few Raptors on the move. Well, one who's recently, who just became a former Raptor, but also one of the most beloved Raptors of all time. We can start there. DeMar DeRozan headed to SACTO. I was a little surprised that it ended up working out the way that it did. I know we did the episode a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned, you know, there's some teams interested in him. His time in Chicago was probably up, but I wasn't expecting him to be a Sacramento King. He's back in his home state, closer to LA, but, you know, he teams up with De'Aaron Fox and DeMontis Sabonis, they ended up trading Harrison Barnes away as part of a pretty complicated sign and trade deal, at least unless until you pay attention to it. But Harrison Barnes is in San Antonio now. So DeMar will slide into that starting lineup. They also have Keegan Murray. I think it's a fun team after they came up a little short in the play-in tournament last year. What are your thoughts on the fit of DeMar in Sacramento and what the Kings can do next season?
I know like the big conversation around that trade was like, oh, floor spacing. It's almost like an old man yells at Cloud Rant, but it's like DeMar is one of the best scorers that we've seen in our lifetime in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Talk about like consistency. Like this is a guy that's averaged 20 points per game in the NBA for the last, like, it feels like a decade. I don't know what the actual stat is. I know he has like one of the longest streaks though, along with LeBron for like active players to average 20 points per game in a season. But you know, like he is an incredible scorer. He's still incredible in the clutch. And he's just like that level of player that is going to try, like, for what the Kings are trying to do. Like, they finally snapped the drought. They got to the playoffs 2 years ago. And now it's like, all right, how can we get over the hump and actually win a playoff series? Like, that is the next step. And going to get a player like that, I don't know how there could be anything but positive things to say about acquiring a player like DeMar when that is your next step. And you put him next to incredibly talented players like De'Aaron Fox and DeMontis Sabonis without having to give up Keegan Murray. And then you talk about the guys that are like, you know, kind of starting to bud underneath, you know, that starting lineup. Keon Ellis was someone who was incredible in that play-in tournament game, locking up Steph Curry. And like, we saw him really come along at the end of the year as a true like lockdown defender. He was the reason they felt comfortable enough to ship out Davion Mitchell. So it's like, you know, Keon Ellis and Devin Carter, who they just drafted, who he feels like one of the more NBA-ready prospects. I know he's going to be out with a shoulder injury for the first, I think they said it's going to be like 6 months from the time.
Surgery,
which just happened a couple weeks ago. So that's probably going to take him till probably about midway through the season. But that's another player that like they expect to be able to contribute right away once he is healthy. So, you know, that's a team that I feel like is starting to put the pieces together, and they, you know, have already been a winning caliber team over the last couple seasons. I mean, I know they missed out on the playoffs last year after losing in the play-in tournament, but I do think that DeMar DeRozan is the type of player that will, you know, definitely get them back into, they'll stay in the play-in tournament range. They have an opportunity for sure if things click to get into that top six in the West, because, you know, like we saw this year, like the parity in the West is so even that it really feels like any given year, it could be a different top six teams based on, you know, who gets hot at the right time and everything like that. So, you know, I do think that DeMar DeRozan, that acquisition is one that could, you know, kind of catapult them from the play-in tournament to a top six team in the West.
I like the way you put that. And the one thing I will say, and I'm not even saying this to be a knock on him, but DeMar will be 35 next season. And the interesting footnote with that, you mentioned Devin Carter, his dad, Anthony Carter, was teammates with DeMar DeRozan in Toronto. So now that just shows how long DeMar has been in the NBA, but he's stamped as a vet. You know, they have multiple options, you know, for late game opportunities. You know, I trust DeMar with the ball. I trust De'Aaron Fox with the ball in late game situations. You talk about floor spacing. I think it's important to remember, and it's easy to forget that, you know, in that play-in tournament situation, Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter were out. So they were down two very key guys. Yeah, you didn't. I'm surprised you didn't mention Kevin Huerter. These are two guys that like also they floor spacing. They'll do that. Like, you know, that like, there's I trust, you know, Malik Monk. I'm sure he would be very happy to take eight threes a game. Keegan Murray, I'm sure Mike Brown's telling him he's not taking as many threes a game. Shoot the ball even more than you are shooting the
right,
ball.
Right, exactly.
You know, so they have a pretty interestingly balanced roster. And like you said, you know, that was the best guy available that made the most sense. Is it a perfect fit? No. Could they make it to be an ideal fit? I could see it happening. And I think that's kind of very well put to say that in the Western Conference, you could just sit by and do nothing and say, oh, man, there's nobody out there that fits perfectly. Or, hey, this guy's out here. He's a veteran. He's got a lot to bring to the table. He's still, you know, a borderline all-star player who wants to win. Let's bring him in. Let's try and win ball games. And I think that's what DeMar DeRozan is going to do in Sacramento. Now, the other one, I said a guy who just became a former Raptor, Gary Trent Jr., has his time with the Raptors is over. So officially, I saw some people kind of say that the Norman Powell trade ends up a loss for both teams. And I think Gary Trent Jr. had some moments in Toronto. I think that there was a little more belief in what he might have been able to be long term. It's wild to think that that trade was 3 years ago to happen in that 2020-21 season. And he was a part of a playoff team that ended up playing in the playoffs against the Sixers in that series in 2022, which feels like just yesterday, but it's a while ago. And I said this, though, you know, when the Raptors drafted Jacoby Walter, it felt like they got a guy with similar size and similar strengths. Obviously not a one for one, not the exact same player, but it kind of feels like history repeating itself because we're having this conversation when they replaced Norm with Gary Trent. Oh, we got a younger guy who does some of the same things with a similar physical frame, but you can just mold him to be exactly what you want him to be for your system. Well, again, now Jacoby Walter, a younger guy who has similar physical features, who you can mold to do something similar. So thoughts on Gary Trent in Milwaukee and the end of his time in Toronto. And do you think that Jacoby Walter can just slide into that role, or can they ease him into that role?
I do think that like that is the perfect opportunity for Jacoby Walter to take on a bigger role because, you know, obviously like, they want Grady Dick to do similar things that Gary Trent did in terms of spacing the floor and, you know, the touches and everything like that. Obviously, they're going to hope that Grady Dick can create his own shot a little bit more than that. And I honestly think that I mean, hey, listen, like you just said, I had to stop myself there because we said these same things about Gary Trent in comparison to Norman Powell. And honestly, Norman Powell, Gary Trent never turned into the shot creator that Norman Powell was.
Right.
He's obviously still an incredible shooter. I just looked. I didn't realize he still shot 39% from three last year. So, like, he's still knocking it down at a high clip. He's still, you know, an incredible high-volume three-point shooter. And that's a great gap for the Bucks. That's exactly what they need, another guy that can space the floor for Giannis and take a little bit of pressure off of him like that. So, you know, that's an incredible gap for them. But, yeah, in terms of the Raptors, like, Jacoby Walter, to me, feels like someone who, if he reaches his ceiling, he's more athletic than Gary Trent is. I think he has a higher ceiling in terms of being a shot creator and being able to put the ball on the deck and make things happen. Like, defensively, we saw Gary Trent have moments where he really was locked in defensively and he's coming up with crazy amounts of steals and everything like that. I think he was, like, leading the league in steals a couple of years ago before he got hurt. I don't know if Jacoby Walter is there, like, defensively. But, you know, again, like, the tools are there and he's younger. Yeah. So, like, you know, I don't see why they would have even extended an offer sheet to Gary Trent to kind of just clog up what they're already trying to do. They're already trying to move on to the next regime. They're already trying to put the ball in the hands of their younger guys more often to get this retooling stage off the ground. So to me, like, the move made a lot of sense for the Raptors, and it makes even more sense for the Bucks being able to acquire a guy that can shoot like that and space the floor at such a cheap price.
Yeah, got him on the veterans minimum and reunites him with Dame Lillard. That was his vet when he started his career in Portland. So now they're back together. We'll see what the Bucks can do. Also, we learned today that Chris Middleton has surgery on both of his ankles, but he's expected to be ready for the opening of the 2024-25 season. Real quick, this just in, that we talked about the Raptors. Summer Raptors just suffered their first loss of Summer League, lost by 10 to the Jazz. Jacoby Walter, 9 points, 2 of 10 from the field. But growing pains happen, and I do like the aggressiveness to continue to shoot, even if it's not going for you. Shout out to Alex Saar, who went 0-15, but I'm not going to dunk on the young fella. That's fine. Like, it's Summer League. There are plenty of guys. Trae Young had a bad Summer League. Brandon Miller had a bad Summer League. Like, it happens. With everything going on, Summer League is kind of falling by the wayside, I feel like, in the national discussion. But has anything or anyone caught your eye that's worthy of a shout out as we wrap up here?
Yeah, I didn't have one planned, so I'm like kind of thinking of which direction I want to take this in. There's part of me that wants to take it in the direction of like shout out to the second year players that showed up to Summer League and like actually like proved, hey, I'm too good for Summer League. Brandon Miller being one of those guys. Cam Whitmore,
Keontae George,
really tough. Yeah, Keontae George, basically they were like, all right, we don't need you here anymore. You're fine. Brandon Pozemski played really well. Jaime Jaquez Jr. played really well. And I say this almost as a backhanded compliment, or not compliment, not backhanded compliment at all. This is a shot at Scoot Henderson, who I've spoken very highly of, but like, what are you doing, man? He had a really strong closing, like, rookie season. Like, at the end of his rookie season, he started to figure it out. I think people kind of like were disappointed with how he started and kind of wrote him off, and he ended up playing better at the end of the season. But like, go out there and show what you're capable of doing, man. That's just a good opportunity to work on your skills and kind of prove, like, hey, I'm still here. Like, at that, you know, there were times where obviously he was never going to go one over Wemby, but like, he was like at one point a surefire number two overall pick that, you know, everybody, myself included, I spoke very, very highly of him, and I still do believe in Scoot Henderson like crazy. But like, go out there and show it, man. Like, a lot of these guys did that, and it gives you that takeaway of, oh, they're too good for Summer League. Like, let's see what they're capable of doing in the regular season. So I kind of wish I saw that out of him. So that's one part of the kind of reverse shout out that I wanted to give. But then an actual shout out, I want to give a shout out to Reed Sheppard, because he's someone who, the last time that we saw him play on a national stage, he had his worst game of his college career. You and I have talked about it on Sound System over and over and over again. And I was really impressed with what I've seen for him in summer league, just being able to command an offense. He did a better job of being able to like kind of like show a little bit of shake and create off the dribble than he even showed in college. Still shot the lights out, still defended at a high level. And looks like the Rockets got a really good one with Reed Sheppard. So shout out to him.
Yeah, no, shout out to him. I would say that it's lazy for reasons, but he got the one-for-one shout out from Mark Price himself. And Mark Price sees a little bit of himself in you. Mark Price was a dog. If you aren't familiar with what Mark Price did for the Cavs in like the early 90s, get familiar because he was a dog. And if you're getting comparison to Mark Price from the man himself, then you're doing something right. And Ime Udoka sure, certainly has a pretty good problem to have with all the talent on that roster down in Houston, because they've really got two starting units at this point. They got to figure something out. They might have to consolidate some talent a little bit, but Reed Sheppard, they got it right with that pick. So things are going to be good. I was going to say another shout out, Summer League, Matas Buzelis, one Brewster guy, but he's played really well. I think he was subject to some unfair criticism because of how his season with the G League Ignite went. But he's looked really good at 28 points in one of these Summer League games, looked really comfortable, looked really confident, and he's backing up his words because he's a guy who does have a little bit of swagger about him. He talks a pretty good game, but he also has been backing up so far. So the Bulls are trying to rebuild. Looks like Lonzo Ball's getting healthy. They traded for Josh Giddey. They're starting to invest in their youth, Patrick Williams, and Buzelis is another piece of what they're trying to do. And I know Bulls fans have been hungry for some sort of sense of direction. They got a Chicago native, and they can lean on him. Probably got him at a pretty valuable pick to get him where they got him in this year's draft. So shout out to him. And the other shout out, I want to clarify this, N-O on my hat. I know somebody asked me if it was a D. It's not a Notre Dame hat. There's only one ACC school you'll ever see me repping, and that is my last shout out, Alondez Williams, Dunk of Summer League. That's all I got to say. Look it up. Alondez Williams boomed it. Won't talk about who it was on because it's in the NBA sound system. We know who our peoples are. He's another friend of the program, but big dunk for Alondez Williams in Miami Heat. So he'll be the next person from the Heat's G League pipeline. Watch. He'll be having big playoff games like in no time.
Yeah, Gil felt the need to give that shout out, and he said in our Slack group earlier, but his boy John Collins caught the worst of the dunk of the year. I think, what didn't it win an ESPY? It was like highlight of the year or something
did.
Like that.
I think it did.
I think it was highlight of the year.
We tune these things out over here.
Yeah. So Alondez Williams is getting Gil's former Demon Deacon. He's picking him up where he left off, and that dunk was crazy. Like Gil said, if you haven't seen it yet, just type in Alondez Williams Summer League dunk. It'll pop right up. My man brought it way back for an absolute poster. So go check that out.
Dunk of the summer. That's a great note to end it on. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's edition of NBA Sound System. Please make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. I've said it before, but I'm saying, if you're not tired of hearing me and KI's voice, check us out on twitch.tv/thesportingnews. We're going to get with SN Streams around the Olympics. So we'll talk Olympic basketball while we play NBA 2K. Kyle is banned from taking the 2016 Warriors because I think he had 62 points for Klay Thompson against me. Not fair, but still tune in there. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Shout out to 604 Podcast Network and the good people over there. For Kyle Irving, my name is Gil McGregor. We will catch you back here on NBA Sound System.